This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and we plan on taking you to a few places today. We'll explore the age-old tension in Ukraine over whether to be a part of Europe or to be closer to Russia. It's brought people into the streets in Kiev calling for the president to resign. We'll also talk about scrapping the U.S. Constitution as a way of achieving meaningful change in the United States. I suppose Rush Limbaugh will do a whole show on me calling for the scrapping of the Constitution now. Well, be my guest, Rush. It's actually a serious discussion among legal scholars. We'll talk about it with writer Jeffrey Toobin. We're also counting the ways Christmas has become a fully digital experience. That's later this hour. We'd love to hear your Flickr card, Yuletide hard drive stories. Just call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or go to thetakeaway.org. We're going to digitally retool some Christmas carols, and we know you'll have fun with that. But we begin by putting a tragedy in hindsight. It won't help the victims of the Metro North train derailment over the weekend, but this next discussion just might be a belated call to action. At least four dead, dozens injured in the accident just north of New York City. Investigators say the commuter train was traveling at about 82 miles per hour in a 30-mile-per-hour zone. But how could that even happen? I mean, trains are machines on tracks monitored by sensors that can be remote controlled. In 2008, Congress passed the Rail Safety Improvement Act, requiring railroad companies to install something called positive train control, technology that detects excessive speeding and automatically applies the brakes. I mean, how simple is that? They use something like it in amusement parks where people pay to feel like they're on the verge of crashing. Why do riders sitting comfortably on a train after a holiday weekend have to be killed because of excessive speed? Well, that's because the deadline to install positive train control has continually been moved. Even though it is technically mandated by law, rail firms have at least another 2 years to introduce this technology. In 2008, James Oberstar was a driving force behind this change as chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Congressman Oberstar, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this.
Sure. Also with us is Stuart Silverstein. He's assistant editor at FairWarning.org, a group that investigates America's health and safety record. Stuart, welcome.
Thanks very much.
So, James Oberstar, how tragic is this that the technology for positive train control is still on the shelf?
It's an unnecessary tragedy. In 2007, as one of the first acts of my chairmanship, I moved to enact rail safety legislation, a bill that I had introduced 12 years earlier, but the Republican-dominated Congress at the time, dominated House, did not want to move on that legislation. They wouldn't even hold hearings on it. They just ignored the issue, and as a first issue, a major public policy issue, I moved on this bill. We got it passed through the House in 2007, but under a threat from a veto by the Bush administration, it languished in the Senate until September 12 of 2008, when a terrible crash in California, the Chatsworth crash, killed 25 people and launched the Senate into action. They simply took our House-passed bill, merged it with our also Amtrak reauthorization bill, moved it through the Senate, and President Bush signed it on a Saturday night so they wouldn't have a public a ceremony signing a bill that he had initially opposed.
Well, let's talk about why the train companies, and Stuart Silverstein, let me bring you in here. Why would train companies want to lobby against, apparently, a safety measure that seems so rational here?
Well, for starters, it's the high cost. The cost of the systems has been estimated at well over $10 billion, and that's often cited as one of the reasons. And these are very strong industries. There's the Association of American Railroads, a very powerful lobby. The commuter trains are represented by the American Public Transportation Association, another important lobby. And they've, for many years, they had bottled this up. And in fact, Congressman Oberstar should give himself more credit. He mentioned that he'd been working on this right before the legislation was passed, but he's been working on this since the 1990s. And it got nowhere amid all of this opposition. It finally took that terrible tragedy out here in Chatsworth, California in 2008 to move it forward. But ever since then, there's been a very strong lobbying effort to keep it from actually being put into place.
James Oberstar, how is our system different from train systems around the world?
First of all, we passenger trains share track with freight rails. In most cases, except for those few miles that Amtrak owns outright in the Northeast Corridor. So most of the places where our long-haul passenger trains operate is on freight rail track. On the commuter lines, it's a different story. Many of the commuter line railroads do own their own track, but also they are shared. But they're also operating on very old track, old equipment, and the cost as Stu Silverstein said a moment ago, is substantially high. But they've known this since 2007 when we passed this bill. They've known it since 2008 when it was enacted into law. And some systems began making the investments, like Metrolink in Southern California. They set aside the funds. They made the investments. They installed the technology. But the freight railroads, except for BNSF Railroad, which has embraced PTC technology and has made the investments, have, as an overall organization, the Association of Railroads, have repeatedly appealed for delay and more time to do the installation. But we've seen that with every new technology introduced in the safety sector in transportation.
Yeah, it was the same with the seatbelts. James Oberstar, hold on for just a second there. In the short time we have before we go, Stuart Silverstein, is the safety record in the United States in terms of the rail system a good one? Is this investment absolutely warranted? It certainly doesn't seem as though a safety system that is good for freight would be good for passengers.
The federal agencies have been divided on this issue. The Federal Railway Administration had come out with a study saying it would save about 4 or 5 lives a year. And given that and the large cost, it wasn't worthwhile. At the same time, you've had the National Transportation Safety Board. They've made this one of their most wanted improvements for more than 2 decades now, and they're convinced it would be worthwhile. We just want to add one more point related to this. The railroads have approached this as only a cost, but at the same time, this could benefit the performance of the railroads. The same safety technology could be used to help make the trains run more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And thus could be a good bet all the way around.
Very good point. With thanks to Stuart Silverstein, assistant editor of FairWarning.org, and former Congressman James Oberstar, chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. James and Stuart, thanks so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you. And with Stuart.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.